is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Michael Shanduger from The Athletic. And, you know, off-season, kind of quiet right now for Seattle. A couple moves made. I guess the first one, what was your reaction when you found out they signed Paxton Lynch?
A little bit of a chuckle. Not because I don't have faith in Paxton's abilities, I guess. I didn't pay too much attention when he was in Denver to have too much of an informed opinion one way or the other. The chuckle was, because you remember Denver traded with Seattle to move up to get Paxton. And, you know, already, what, 2 or 3 years later, he's with Seattle. So then, B, Seattle loves getting guys who are, like, they washed out when they were first-round picks. And Seattle's like, oh, yeah, we'll just give them a second chance over here. You remember they're basically just poaching that 2013 first round. What, they got Fluker, Mingo.
Mm-hmm.
At one point had Jokel. I'm missing somebody. Deion Jordan in that class,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, Deion Jordan was in that class, right?
Yeah, they just said, oh, yeah, you know, that 2013 draft was bad, but I'm going to give all those first-round picks a shot. So that was, like, my first reaction, a little chuckle there. Pete and John kind of staying on brand.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. I mean, they've had a couple interesting signings. I thought the Jamie Meter signing was pretty good, too.
Well, I mean, the thing I like to tell people with free agency with the Seahawks is, like, everyone, you know, you probably get these questions too. Every time, like, some big name guy is going to be a free agent or gets released, or, you know, is a trade block. You know, I get tweets all day. You know, are we going to get Antonio Brown or you know, someone like Kareem Hunt's on the market? Oh, what do you think the Seahawks, you know, sign Kareem Hunt or you know, just basically anybody? It's just like, guys, chances are they're not going to be a big name. Chances are it can be some dude you never heard of. And then John and Pete are going to hope he develops. So, like, that's what I'm expecting the next, like, two, 3 months is, like, keeping their own guys and signing a bunch of dudes. I got to go hit Pro Football Reference to figure out who the heck they are.
Yeah. See, now, do you take the same tact as I do? Because, again, you get the tweets, I get the calls, I get the tweets and all that stuff. And basically, they need to build up draft choices. And the one way to do it, where last year they needed the players, and so they cost themselves, you know, three pretty good compensatory picks, they need the compensatory picks. And the higher you sign a player, the chance you're not going to get those good compensatory picks.
Yeah, and not only do they need the comp picks in the future, they need more picks right now. You know, how many picks do they have right now, John?
Four.
They have four.
They have
four picks.
They don't have a second. Right, they don't have a sixth, and they don't have a seventh.
Yeah, you know, John Snyder ain't gonna walk into that draft with no four picks, right? So that to me, that kind of rules out some trades in terms of, like, a guy like Antonio Brown, or, you know, that you're gonna have to give him some capital to get. You know, they don't have the capital to give up. So if anything, I'm expecting John to try to maneuver his way to spend as little as he can on outside guys, take care of his guys, and, like, walk into that draft room, like, look, now we have, like, eight. Or let's come out of day one with, you know, six or seven picks. Like, that's what I'm expecting, on top of the comp picks that you're talking about. Like, I think it'll be, for the most part, pretty quiet free agency in terms of, like, grabbing UFAs from elsewhere.
Oh, I agree. And that's the thing. I mean, it plays to what they need. I think right now they need defense more than they need offense. And if that's going to be the case, it's a great defensive draft.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the defensive needs are pretty glaring. I mean, what happens is Seattle can't look at Frank Clark's production and Jaren Reed's production and then think, okay, our pass rush will be fine. No, no, no. You got to keep getting better. Although pass rush is something that carries over from year to year, like, for the most part, you can kind of rely, like, defensively, hey, our pass rush is going to be, if it was good in 2018, it'll probably be good in 2019 if we build the right way. Where you can't rely on what they did last year, it's like, you can't just think, oh, we had a great turnover differential because our defense was intercepted a bunch of passes in the first month of the season, that we can rely on that. That won't carry over. They got to try and upgrade the best they can in the secondary. So I'm looking at, I was going over guys like at the Senior Bowl, because, you know, they're going to grab at least one or two guys from there. Those DBs who are big and can play corner, can play some safety if need be, because that's where the upgrades have to be. They still need linebackers. You know, they got to still got to upgrade the pass rush. Now, that's, if you're looking at the draft, yeah, you look at defense and you say, let's build, let's get better, because that's, like, when I watched this season, in terms of personnel, defensively was where I was like, okay, there's some holes here that they need to fix.
Agreed. Let's kind of go over. How do you see the Frank Clark thing? It's just going to be a franchise tag, don't you think?
I would think so, but at the same time, I know Frank wants a long-term deal, right? His agent wants a long-term deal. You know, they're not here to just get tagged a bunch. Like maybe a tag 1 year. Like okay, we'll settle for it because you know his agent's kind of come out and said, well, we're not going to be upset if that happens. But you know, you don't pay for an agent to just get him a bunch of tags, right?
Right.
You need the long-term deals. So I would think that they go in with that mindset and they're like, okay, if we can't come to something, we'll settle. Like the tag is a settle in that regard, if that makes sense. Like they're going in there thinking, let's get paid. My client just did this. He's this age. He's proven to be durable to play through any injuries that he has. And he's a 25 or 26-year-old edge rusher. That's what you pay in this league. So give my client this long-term deal that he has earned. Didn't hold out, has developed into a leader over the years. All the things that they were gambling on when he was a controversial pick, his agent's going to walk in there and say, he did this, 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 and that. Pay him. And Seattle's, this is one of those, it's like, okay, they can't play hardball because, you know, they need Frank.
You're right. No, I agree. And that's why I still think they can get something done, but I think it's just going to be difficult.
Yeah, it probably will be. It depends on how strategic they play it with guys like Lawrence and Dallas. Who else was tagged this year? Ansa?
Yeah, Ziggy Ansa.
I think was tagged, and I don't think he had that great of a year. But if you're Frank, you probably think, let's let DeMarcus go first, see what his people do and what they do with Dallas. See if he kind of sets a new floor on a long-term deal, like whatever he sets the floor on the guaranteed money, the new money. And then if you're Frank, you say, okay, cool. I'm probably better than this guy, so let me get more than that. And then see how Seattle responds. And like I said, if you end up in like you guys are just staring at the wall after you know a few hours of meetings and say, all right, let's tag up and revisit this.
Mm-hmm. What about DJ Fluker and J.R. Sweezy?
I think they're in a good spot with both of those guys because they played well enough that, you know, you want to keep them and that you're happy, like, if you do keep them. But they're not to the point where, like, some team that's got, like, bad interior linemen is going to say, yeah, let's give B.J. Fluker $9 million.
Yeah.
Dealing from Seattle. Like, the guys who are in the middle in terms of, like, average money per year, it's just such a crap market for those guys. Either you're like, teams want bargains, like rookie guys who are on bargains and a bunch of vets on minimums, and then they're just willing to, like, max out on left tackles and corners and quarterbacks, right? So and edge rushers. So if your guy's in the middle like that, as long as they don't outperform themselves, I don't really think JR or DJ really did, you're in a good spot. Like, here's this two-year deal worth something that's not going to break the bank, and it's really a one-year deal that we can get out of next year if you suck in 2019. They can probably work those with JR, you know, and with DJ, you know, and kind of keep their line together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that Chauncelle Henderson, an offensive lineman in Buffalo, got a one-year deal at $4.25 million, and the way they structured was kind of interesting because, you know, he got the 1.5 base, and then basically he had like about $3 million tied up in playtime incentives. And so, in other words, each game you miss, you don't get a game check for it. But that would be something, I think, with DJ that probably would be the way to do that because you love the way he plays, but also he's not going to probably play 16 games.
Yeah, I think what he played 5 in 2017 before he went on IR with Daniel, and then played 9 or started 9 and played in 10 last year. So, I mean, yeah, he's not running the table and playing all 16 of your games, and
no.
You have to take that into account, you know. And they will, and they'll structure the deal probably that way to be favorable. And then they'll also know, like, hey, we still got what's the kid's name, Jordan Simmons,
right?
Waiting in the wings, you know, Jermaine's still an option there to play guard. I don't know how great of an option that probably will be, but it is an option there. And obviously you can go find, you know, you go get you a 6th-round pick or some 5th-round pick, or you can spend a high pick on, you know, interior linemen because you need them. But yeah, with DJ, yeah, you'd probably want to save yourself if he, you know, injures himself and can't get through the season, because it's proven that he probably won't, and you have to account for that. You're right.
Yeah, and that's got to be one of the concerns because, again, he's not going to be there. Now, I figure that KJ Wright's going to have enough of a market that it's going to be hard to get him back.
I go back and forth on KJ because you would think there's going to be a market, right? You got a Pro Bowl alternate. He's KJ Wright. He's got a name in terms of like what other teams are going to see in terms of his value, right? Still big, still strong, still fast, still can make plays in open field. You saw that in the last, like, what, week 17, week, you know, and then the playoff game as well. However, he'll be, what, 30 at the start of the season? And that's just a number that scares people, that 30. And he's had two knee procedures in the last 2 years. You know, he was part of the Regenikind Five in 2017, all those guys who were flying, I think, to San Fran to go get their knees worked on. And I think he might have did something similar this year. So, I mean, on one hand, it's KJ Wright, right? Pro Bowl Arson, you know who he is. He's got a pedigree. On the other hand, 30-year-old linebacker with bad knees, right? Like how are teams going to look at that, right? Because if you're obviously KJ's people, you look at it one way,
right?
But if you're a team looking to make an investment, you're looking at it the other way, right? And then you just got to meet in the middle somewhere. It's just a matter of perspective. I'm interested to see how that goes. And because I'm looking at it from both perspectives like that, I can't really decide how that's going to play out.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a fascinating one. But then, of course, what do you do at the weak side linebacker position if he does go?
That's the tough part, and that is if like I'm pretending to be KJ's agent, like in my head. You got to look at that and go, okay, cool. You don't want to keep KJ. That's fine. What else are you going to do? You know, you don't really have many options at that spot. They were literally playing a safety there. You know, they went and got a guy who's facing prison time because they couldn't figure out an adequate replacement for KJ. You know, after a while, after one game, they gave up on Shaquem. After a few more games, they gave up on Austin Kalitro. Like, that's the other part of it. It's almost like how I look at firing a coach, whether it's in college or in the pros. You need to have someone lined up if you're going to fire your guy. And it's the same thing with players to an extent. It's like, okay, cool, we'll get rid of KJ. And then what? Right? If you don't have a good answer for and then what, then you approach it as if you want to keep the guy that you have. Because their and then what section, it looks bad.
Mm-hmm,
right? You can kind of hope that you develop Shaquem. You can try and keep Kalitro and maybe develop there. You can draft at that spot. But, you know, it's a bunch of question marks. And when you have a bunch of question marks, you just really don't have any answers.
No, agreed. So that's the question marks right now. And we're getting closer to start getting some of these things answered because, again, it's combines just around the corner. Super Bowl will be done. What all do you have on The Athletic?
You know, I'm going to pivot away from me personally. Yo, our people who are down, we're down at the Senior Bowl and who are doing our pre-draft stuff are just on fire. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I'm reading their stuff, learning. Like, I'm one of our, like, regular subscribers, because, you know, people want to know my thoughts. I'm like, hey, how do you think of this kid out of Michigan or this kid out of Florida or this linebacker from, you know, like Delaware State or something like that? I mean, I could do some interviewing and pretend I'm some expert in an hour, but like our guys like Dane, oh man, he's killing it. Like our guys are doing pre-draft stuff. Me personally, I'm gearing up for my pre like combine coverage, because I'll be at the combine this year. Some traveling and stuff like the owners meeting, kind of answering free agency questions as things go along. But like, if I'm gonna plug the company right now, I'm definitely plugging our pre-draft coverage with our like national team, because what they do is they nationalize it, and at the same time they can help us localize it. Like, I got a piece up there now of guys who are at the Senior Bowl who the Seahawks have targeted, right? And that's thanks to the work that our national guys are doing. So I would, if you're a draft junkie, you want to know how the Seahawks are going to get better with all these prospects, boom, we're definitely the place to go.
That sounds good. That's Michael Sean Duggar of The Athletic. Anything on the podcast?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we got guests galore coming this offseason. I'm really excited about our lineup. We just had Sam Gold, who works for us at The Athletic, our film guy who really, like, breaks down everything and answers those, like, hard questions that just watching every game really won't answer. And then we just had my guy, Ben Baldwin. He's kind of like our numbers cruncher guy. You know, he's the head of our campaign of the running backs. The running backs don't have a bunch of value. We just had him on the show last night, and that show should drop fresh Monday morning. I'm really excited about that because Ben brings a unique perspective in terms of watching film and crunching numbers. It's great. I love it. That should be dropping Monday.
That sounds good. Michael Sean Duggar of The Athletic, thanks for joining us.
All right, John, take care.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Hey, Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Sunny. How can you not be doing well on a day like today?
Gotta like this.
I'm going to start you off with a couple of a change-up and a curveball here. First off, it sounds like my buddy Irish Mankey's a little under the weather. I wish him good health, and I hope he gets over whatever he's dealing with besides being Irish.
No, that's true. Okay, good point.
Second, just wanted to give a huge shout-out to one of our true Seattle superheroes, Edgar Martinez. I couldn't have been happier this week for Edgar, and I just say it's about friggin' time.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Oh, I was so happy for him. I mean, they're just one of the legitimate good guys. And in sports, in addition, you know, kind of nobody really seemed to talk about or focus that much on the injustice the Mariners did to Edgar by not really bringing him up until he was 27 years old after he won a couple of batting championships in Calgary. And we were treated to, you know, several dismal displays of mediocre power by Jim Presley and Darnell Coles for several years there. You know, I mean, nobody seems to remember or talk about that too frequently enough as far as I'm concerned, because basically Edgar was ready to go for about 3 years before they brought him up.
Right.
And that was a shame because when you start talking about career numbers, he literally got screwed out of a couple there. And plus, I mean, he lost that almost entire year because of the stupid hamstring problem he had that he got that game up in Vancouver right before the season started. He blew his hamstring out, and he pretty much missed almost the entire year there. So, you know, I just get sick of, well, what about the career numbers? It's like, no, he got screwed up 4 years of his prime. And the other thing that just, the thing that needs to be, just can't say it enough, Edgar had no legs. Edgar's a right-handed hitter. Edgar won two batting championships, for God's sakes.
And was phenomenal.
And Wade Boggs was still playing at that time.
Yeah. No, you got to give so much credit to him.
And additionally, he wasn't shy on the power numbers either. You know, so I get a little tired of some of the detractors there. And
well, that's the one thing. I mean, there's no detractors in this town.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it was just getting the national people to start to appreciate, you know, the position of being a designated hitter.
Yeah, and I mean, he did obviously was a designated hitter, but they. You know, I think the harbinger was cast when Harold Baines was voted in by the senior committee, and I think at that point it'd just be an embarrassment if they, you know, if Harold Baines finds his way into the Hall of Fame and Edgar doesn't.
Right.
I mean, seriously. So it's like I just couldn't be happier.
No, I think everybody is just delighted about this because again, he's so deserving. He did such a great job, and he's such a great person.
Oh, yeah. And also, it overcome the eye problems that he had.
Right.
You know, which also isn't never really talked about very much. But the incredible discipline he had to go through to prepare to be able to play every game. I mean, you just can't say enough about Edgar from any direction you want to turn.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So let me segue from that into my constant annual consternation about Joe Klecko's invitation into the NFL Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I know Dr. Z is no longer with us, and he was a big champion of Joe Klecko. Any chance in anywhere in my lifetime this is going to happen?
It would have to happen when he's a senior, probably. I think that would be the time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but you know he's going to have to wait. As he
how
has
long do you have to wait for that?
What's that? 25 years.
How long
years.
Do you have to wait for that?
25 years. Yeah, then he goes into the senior candidacy, and you know he's voted on in the summer.
Now, is that 25 years after you retire?
No, 25 years of eligibility, so it'd be 30 years. So, in other words, you know he has to wait 5 years to be voted on, and then you get 25, and then you go into the senior category.
Right, okay. So, I got to live a long, hearty life.
It's a long shot right now, and part of the problem is that defensive players, there's just such a disparity. I mean, we take more offensive players than defensive players, and so that's one of the issues. And so, unfortunately, that puts you at a disadvantage because like 60 some percent of the Hall of Famers, probably about 66, are offensive guys.
Yeah, I think a lot of that too is. It's just so hard to quantify, for comparison purposes, linemen, mm-hmm. even offensive linemen for that matter. I know they've got stats now, for sacks and tackles and everything else. But, I mean, when Klecko was playing half of his career, they didn't have sacks. Wasn't even when he had the 20-plus sack year,
right.
That wasn't even a category yet.
Right, correct.
So it's just a little frustrating. Does he have much support?
He's barely made it into the room, so I'd say no.
Where do you think the problem? You mentioned obviously the defensive issues. Is it a national problem? Because he does seem to have strong support by the folks from the tri-state area.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's just not enough. I mean, because you need to get into the 25, you need to get into the 15. He just has not enough support to be able to get into that.
Yeah, well, and I suspect having Dr. Z being one of your big champions, probably from a political point of view, wasn't perhaps.
Oh no, Dr. Z was well respected.
Your best champion.
No, I mean he was such a great asset in the room that he's so missed.
Yeah, that he had quite a career.
Oh, he did.
But
he was great.
So let me ask you one last question for today's purpose. I know everybody's talking about that the Jets have the second. Biggest number under the cap going into free agency, but it seems to me they also have a ton of free agents.
Right.
So obviously that cap number is a bit of a misnomer, I think, because they've got to sign a lot of their own guys or bring in new guys to replace the other guys. So it's not as if they've got a full roster and they're just picking up a couple of guys with $100 million.
Mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
seems to me that it's a bit of a misnomer. Of course, the flip side that could be good is you got a new staff coming in. If you want to turn over your roster, well, now's a chance to do it because you got a lot of guys you're letting go.
Right. So there's going to be a lot of change, no doubt. Hey, thank you for the call, Jack.
Take care, John. Have yourself a great weekend.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Wenatchee. Hey, Rick.
Ms. Clayton, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, last weekend to me was one of the best weekends of football there had been as far as the playoffs.
Oh, I agree. I mean, that was fantastic.
I mean, how can you get any better with two-point overtime games? I understand the controversy, and there's always going to be controversy dating back to your days in Pittsburgh with the guy there in the end zone against Houston, Renfro, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you could go through history and talk about all the bad calls.
Yeah, you can, but it's a shame because that as impactful of a call as we've ever seen.
Sure. Hey, Romo and Nance, as far as the announcers last weekend, boy, I thought they were just, I don't know, I wasn't a Romo fan, I'm still really not, but he was on point with, how he was able to call out things. And I have to respect that. And just with Nance, obviously he's, respected just from all of his, traits and doing the Masters and all that sort of thing.
Right.
What was your thoughts on that?
I thought they were great. I mean, what I love, and I mean, I purposely like it, is that, hey, you got Jim Nance describing the play, but then you have Tony Romo forecasting the play. And how right is he on a lot of these? I mean, I just marvel at that and really respect that and really enjoy that.
And Nance wasn't stepping on Romo's toes or talking over him. It was almost like they were in good sync,
right.
I felt.
No, I thought they do a great job. I really respect the work that they do, and I really enjoy listening to them.
And I know it's your brotherhood, but it's just going to be so nice not to have to listen to Joe Buck. I just wish Tony or with Aikman, Troy, would get a different partner. He's just so overexposed.
I don't know. I still like him. I think he's good.
Yeah, I just Green Bay fans, you name it, want to boycott him. So, hey, on the playoff note, the AFC NFC trophy that they gave out,
yeah,
Was that like just a spherical shape of a football, or is there like a crystal football that they put
I usually never get a chance to see it because I'm usually heading down to the locker room or that. But it's like, I think, isn't it a crystal type of thing? Am I correct in that?
Well, that's what I thought it usually is, but these guys were grabbing it up by the spine, and it was just like, you know, an aluminum little trophy.
Mm-hmm. No, it's but it's a big deal. There's no doubt. And, you know, that's one of the great celebrations. And unfortunately, it had to be done on home turf by the visiting team. That doesn't go over too well.
Well, they did them in the locker rooms, you know, just for the fan outcry or whatever. But I don't know, maybe they just add the crystal to it later, and that way people can hand it around, and it's not 50 pounds or 40 pounds or however much. So, hey, shifting gears, Mel Stottlemyer passing.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of a staple around here. People don't really realize, you know, he lived out in the Issaquah area and Yakima. And, you know, obviously his son, Mel Jr., was a pitching coach. And can you give me a little of your feeling on him?
Well, I mean, you can see that. I mean, as a pitcher, he was great. And as a person, he was great. And it's great to see that, you know, you got two generations of Stottlemyers that have been around, have been so good. And, you know, his passing was a tough one because, again, I mean, you really respect what he's offered to baseball and what he's offered in the community.
Sure. I watch a lot of the MLB channel during the week, and Ron Darling, he was Ron, his pitching coach, and he was just relating to all the people's lives that are pitchers, that to Mariano Rivera, his boat that Mel had was named Mo in the Ninth type thing. And just if people get a chance to take a look at his career, just maybe, you know.
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing. He was a fine pitcher, and I think he had like 153 complete games, and back in the era where they threw more and stuff like that. So.
No, he was just a craftsman of what he was able to do. He was an absolute great one. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, John Clayton, because it's always good to be on 710 ESPN with the professor when his bags are packed and he's on his way to another Super Bowl.
All set to go. And looking forward to it.
Good for you, man. Yeah, I can't wait to hear you down there. And before I bring it to the show, John Clayton, I'm going to channel some of the Saints fans' anger and a bit of the pain I heard in JB and Renton's voice by giving a shout-out to the jackass official who threw the flag on the Ron and Don show. Come on, man. That's some bologna sandwich. What in the flacko were you thinking? Are you out of your Vulcan mind? And just in case, three people made the call, in the words of Clarence the Barber, forget you, forget you, and forget you. Who's next? I made my bones on the Ron and Don show way before they veered off the road to the serious things in life, but I'm rolling with them boys till the end. And this ain't it. Now, John Clayton, as you just heard, I pride myself on making ridiculous statements or asking ludicrous questions for the benefit of a very serious point, like when I said the Seahawks needed to consider putting Russell Wilson on defense because he created a lot of sacks, or when I suggested calling the Seahawks the Gumbies, and some snapperhead who took me serious called in and said he didn't like the name because it made him think of a cigar-smoking Eddie Murphy in the 80s on SNL, playing Gumby, and completely missed the point of the bend-don't-break defense of the Seahawks. Ironically, John Clayton, the Gumbies missed that point, too, and gave up 16 yards on a 3rd-and-14 in a wild-card game.
Oof.
So, with that ridiculously long disclaimer, John Clayton, I trust you're sitting down before I ask this outlandish question.
Okay, I'm sitting down.
Maybe you should lie down.
Okay.
Why doesn't the NFL just have the two Pro Bowl teams play for the Super Bowl, and the quarterback wins it for his actual team?
Have the two Pro Bowl teams play for the Super Bowl?
Yeah, the NFC versus the AFC, and then if the NFC wins it, since Russell Wilson's the quarterback of the NFC, Seahawks win the Super Bowl.
They don't do it that way. That's not the plan.
Well, they should do it that way because that's exactly what the league does with the officiating teams, John Clayton, from 4 weeks of the preseason to 17 weeks of the regular season. officials operate as a team. They train as a team. They watch games as a team. They call games and confer on those calls as a team. And then when the playoffs start, the league goes in, goes with the, an all-star crew based on Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 evaluations during the season, and then they blow calls in all-star HD fashion, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, because last week we witnessed the NFL history by watching two great NFL title games go to overtime, and instead of talking about two great championship games and those teams moving on to Super Bowl 53, everyone's talking about the referees blowing calls, like roughing Tom Brady's shoulder pad, and, of course, the face-guarding pass interference, helmet-to-helmet, that should have been six flags being thrown. And lastly, John Clayton, I still haven't determined what's more impressive, so I'll ask you, what was more impressive to you? Opening the game with a 15-play, 80-yard scoring drive that took 8 minutes like the Patriots did, or the Chiefs opening up the second half with a 4-play, 74-yard scoring drive that took 2 minutes?
I think the second half, because, you know, you can see, and I've seen it so many times this year with Patrick Mahomes, you know, he might have a slow first half, but boy, can he adjust after that. That I really respect. I mean, he's phenomenal with his adjustments.
Well, and I thought that was the difference in that game, that they just could not get on track in that first half. It's funny how a lot of teams, even I thought the defensive teams would tend more to defer so they can kick off, play defense right away. It would seem like a great offensive team, like the Chiefs, would take the ball and then get him, Patrick Mahomes, on the field throwing right away. But the guy had to stand there for half of a half and you know, watch.
Mm-hmm. No, I just think, let's put this, the great part about this whole season, which, of course, you probably don't like, and sometimes I don't like, is that it's all offense, and we're seeing some of the most, some of the greatest offensive stuff we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, two great drives to in that game. One is power football. The other is explosive football. They both were a thing of beauty. Safe travels, John Clayton. Looking forward to hearing you next week on the air, and then you're going to be taking calls.
It has to be a little bit later because I'll be in the Hall of Fame meeting, so we don't know. Right. May start sometime after 12 or 12:30.
Okay, we'll all be standing by. Safe travels, John Clayton.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Attila in Olympia. Hey, Attila.
Good morning, Mr. Clayton.
Good morning.
I think I'll be taking – I'd like to take your answer off the air to this question.
Yeah.
It seems to me that all these contracts seem to be hesitant to go past 2021. Do you foresee a when the contract is due in 2021, that might happen, what happened in the 1980s with the influx of gambling revenue coming in? It's almost like an elephant in the room. We really don't know what's going to happen, where everybody's kind of hesitant to go beyond 2021. Are there, like, certain items the players and player agents are saying but not saying to everybody? Are the owners kind of going, uh-oh, what are we going to do? Is there something like an elephant in the room that this may explode to what happened in the 1980s?
No, I don't, because I just don't see the players having the resolve of the players in the 1980s. I've covered every one of these disputes, and, you know, to sacrifice the amount of money, you know, you can take it to a certain point, and then they back off. And that's what I think will happen. It happened in 2011. It'll happen because, again, you know, because the players aren't as adamant about all these things, and because of that, you know, they tend to, you know, not go the whole way. And if they want to go the whole way, I don't know how successful they're going to be. So ultimately, you know, there'll be a labor stoppage, but I don't think it's going to go more into the preseason than it did the last time. Remember, they only lost one game. And, you know, ultimately, there's so much that's there, they'll work out some kind of a deal.
Even with or without Richard Sherman representing the players, that was a joke. I'm sorry.
No, I think Richard's going to be in there. I think he is going to be one of the guys doing it.
Well, thank you for it very much, and have a wonderful weekend, John.
Okay, Dilla, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, quick question, bud. I see that in your mock draft, which was beautifully written, you have the first quarterback going off at number 6.
Yeah.
And then you also have Denver taking a quarterback.
Right.
And one going in between. What do you think it would cost for Denver to move up ahead of New York Giants?
Probably cost, probably an extra 1 and something else, maybe a 1 and a 5, something in that neighborhood.
So this year's 1, next year's 1, and then maybe a 5?
Yeah.
Okay, and then do you think Oakland would probably not want to trade with Denver since they're in a division? Correct, or does that not matter?
I don't think they care. I mean, I think that if they get the right deal, that they would do anything. Remember, this is John Gruden.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Okay, and then another one quick comment is with the Tony Romo love, I mean, it's not too hard when you're watching the Patriots to find out who they're going to throw to. It's either Edelman or Gronk. There's not much other weapons they have. I understand he's calling it out, but it seems like most of the people who want to do color commentary or play-by-play are able to make that same call. It doesn't seem like he's breaking any codes here. You agree or disagree?
Well, I just like him. I just think he does such a great job. I mean, to me, he does it differently than anybody else, and so I totally respect that, and I like that. And so, he does it so naturally, and I like the enthusiasm that he has in making those calls.
Okay. Hey, John, you travel safe. Any serious next week?
Right now, no.
Okay, all right.
So probably not next
care.
Week. Okay, Victor, thank you. Let's go to Matt in West Seattle. Hey, Matt.
Hey, John. Good to talk to you.
Good talking to you.
I think the Rams are set up for a heartbreak here. If you look back at the 2014-2015 season, Detroit lost to Dallas in a heartbreak. Dallas lost to Packers in a heartbreak. Packers lost to the Seahawks in a heartbreak. And then the Hawks lost to the Pats in a heartbreak. This year, we've had Chicago lose to Philly in a heartbreak. We've had Philly lose to the Saints in a heartbreak. And we've had the Saints lose to the Rams in a heartbreak, which, if that goes by that, something's going to happen in The Rams are going to be a sad team after next Sunday.
Okay, well, very interesting evaluation. Good research. Hey, Matt, thank you. Let's go to our last call to Brett in Seattle. Hey, Brett.
Hey, John. I was wondering about the L.A. Rams attendance this past year. Do you know what their average attendance was? And was it mostly opposing fans? And I'm thinking, what about the Chargers? They were winning, but I heard they didn't draw very well. When they move and share that stadium over in Inglewood, will it be the team that wins, the team that's going to draw? Whoever wins will draw. What do you think?
What you're seeing is that it's the Chargers, the ones that get more visitors in. I mean, the Rams, as the season went on, they started getting the crowds. I think they probably averaged about 70. You know, they at one point they had limited to 65,000. You know, they can go to 90. But I think with the success of the team and how exciting it was, you know, they've won L.A. The Chargers play in the StubHub, where they only get 28,000, and they're lucky to get 14,000 home fans. So the battle of L.A. right now, even though both teams are good, has been won by the Rams. Hey, thank you. And, of course, we will be back to you on Monday at 10 from Atlanta. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.